Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. Only 3 weeks left until Election Day, but there is much more on the ballot besides the presidency. We'll also choose members of the House of Representatives. And today on Hearsay, we continue our candidate conversations by looking at the two candidates who are standing in the second congressional district for election to the House of Representatives. Stay with us after this news from NPR. Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis, and I cannot believe we are just a little bit less than 3 weeks from the election. Although, honestly, in some ways, it seems like it's been going on since the turn of the century, doesn't it? It does feel like it has been a while. But we are voting for much more than a presidential candidate in this election. We're voting for members of the House of Representatives as well. Some of you in our listening area will be voting for mayors. So there's lots of questions on the ballot this time of year, as well as two amendment questions as well, about which we'll talk in the coming days. Today, we're going to meet the candidates who want to represent those of you who live in the second congressional district. And if you're curious about where the second is, that's all of Accomack and Northampton counties on the Eastern Shore, along with the city of Virginia Beach and parts of Norfolk and Hampton. And the second this time around is an open seat with the retirement of Representative Scott Ridgel. There are two candidates vying for the spot. And in the second half of the program, we'll meet Delegate Scott Taylor. He is the Republican candidate. And in the first half, we're happy to be talking with Sean Brown, who is the Democratic candidate. And you can join us at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Full disclosure, the second half conversation with Delegate Taylor is pre-recorded because of scheduling. We try really hard to make it work for people to be live, but if they can't, we do offer them the opportunity for pre-recording, but you do have an opportunity to speak with Sean Brown, who is an economist, a management consultant, a small business owner. She's a graduate of Brown University, the London School of Economics, and St. Hilda's College at Oxford. In fact, she was elected president of the student body at Brown, becoming the first African-American in the Ivy League and the first female to hold such a position at Brown. She's also studied at MIT and the University of Virginia. And we welcome you to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
So give us a sense of why you want to represent the second in Congress. What are the issues that are particularly important to you?
Well, for me, it's all about leveling the playing field. I've had a tremendous academic career, grew up in a family business, and saw so many things firsthand. I did want to mention that the district also includes all of Pocosin, all of Williamsburg, some of the precincts in James City County, closer to Newport News. But for me, it really has always been about leveling the playing field, whether it's some of the civic organizations that I've been involved in, particularly on the peninsula, and issues such as the veteran homelessness that spreads throughout Hampton Roads, the $15 minimum wage, the concerns that we all have about the diversification of our economy. I have a vision of promoting the type of green technology that makes our military even greener, that allows our young men and women who stand on the front line overseas defending our country to be able to stand on the front line of defending our economy and creating the jobs that we need, early childhood education. You know, I talked to many of our citizens in the second district, and whether it's the grandmother that says, look, I can't raise my grandchildren anymore on a Social Security check, or the father that says, look, for the first time in my life, I'm now beginning to believe that my daughter, who has so much burden from her student loans, is not going to be able to attain the American dream. So those are just some of the issues that we've been looking at, and having a great a listening tour and having an opportunity to do some of the things that I've done with my export company overseas is that I have a chance to sit down and listen to people. People will tell you, you know, I'm the underdog in this race. And sometimes it's about an underdog understanding how an underdog in various situations lives.
Interesting. Sean Brown with us today, a candidate for Congress in the 2nd District. I know you've have made a couple of runs for public office in the past. So this is obviously something that you want to do. What did you learn out of that experience that you bring into this campaign?
Great question. Need more poll workers. So I'm putting a shout out there. But it is, you know, I've been so heavily involved in so many of the issues, whether it's a ceasefire concern, and I was quite concerned about the Virginia Beach issue and seeing on TV, like everyone else, a young lady who was put in handcuffs. And so that's a concern in terms of the use of force. But what I learned over and over again has directly related to running this grassroots campaign, because it's not always about money. Again, I'm the underdog, but you really have to listen to people. And one of the things that became really clear to me in the 2nd District is that it's not necessarily what people have seen in the past in terms of, you know, do you run purple? Are you a Democrat that really runs like a Republican? No, we are running a blue campaign, as they say, and true blue Democratic values. I'm so proud to have been a Bernie national delegate, and so I bring a little bit more of the progressive wing of the party. But I think that before you can get out and ask people to stand on the front line and fight for issues, you've got to be willing to do that yourself. That's the reason for running.
And you said you were a Bernie delegate, and I know you've written quite extensively about that. So where are you with regard to your party's nominee? Because that's a question we're asking everybody who's running.
I think that I was proud to be in Philadelphia and support the most progressive platform of the Democratic Party. So I'm 100% in agreement. I perhaps will talk about a $15 minimum wage, and the presidential nominee will talk about a $12 minimum wage. But it's about understanding how we're all headed in the same direction. I just want to get there a little sooner.
Yeah. And so when you talk about this $15 minimum wage, how would you pay for that? Because that's the thing people usually ask when it comes to that sort of thing.
And so having been a small business owner, grew up a family business, and having had seasonal employees myself, there are various scenarios, whether it's a tax credit for the small businesses to be able to pay that $15, or perhaps the government. You know, I'm very much an advocate of making sure that we use the federal funds that are available for promoting our economy and diversifying the 2nd District. So I think there's a little bit more of an effort that we need to make. I see myself as an informal chief economic development officer for the 2nd District, working with the municipalities, working with the small businesses, making sure that we're getting the most bang for our buck. When we put a dollar into the military budget, we want to make sure that, yes, we're meeting the needs that we have for the military budget, but as a military, for instance, the Navy itself looks at just-in-time manufacturing so that when they are deployed and you need a part, you don't have to wait for the part. Perhaps some of that can be done on board the vessel, or even the Navy looking at a biofuel. Those are businesses that we can train our vets. We can have some opportunities available for the small businesses to be able to create the jobs, the real paying jobs that we really need.
So what are some of those other opportunities? Because that's a really interesting idea about expanding what we do anyway, which is the fact that so much of our economy is sort of federally derived.
I kind of call myself a pay-as-you-go Democrat. And if we don't have it, you know, we've got to make sure that when we're talking about even some of the flooding issues we see now, the people in Virginia Beach need so much help, that we know that those opportunities are available. Looking at transportation is another major. We have such a tremendous need for infrastructure. So the opportunity to look at our transportation needs, not just tying our transportation needs to tourism. So we're just not talking about rail. We're talking about expanding the bus services, whether it's in Virginia Beach or elsewhere. We're talking about ferries. It's a multimodal process.
So let me ask you about that, because representing the city of Virginia Beach, you know that obviously that there is a light rail non-binding referendum on the ballot on November 8th. What's your position on light rail?
It's a as a pay as you go. I am for light rail. I've been endorsed by Smart Transportation or Railroad Union, but at the same time, I don't want to see that burden on taxpayers.
Where should it be?
There, as an economic development process, there is so much money available for federal funding. There are user fees. I think we have to be smarter about how we try to pay for things so that we don't put it on the back of citizens in Hampton Roads. So, yes, we're trying to get people from Washington, D.C. to Richmond to Virginia Beach. And we have Fort Monroe. We have Fort Story. We have so much of a tourism trade. Yes, we want the unification of Fort Monroe in the various parts. Yes, there are a number of items that we're just not pulling together in a comprehensive plan. So we have tourism money. We have the ability to look at some user fees. We need to also attach what we're doing to the port, because we're just not moving people, we are moving product. So having had an export management company with my family for quite a while, and sitting in London as a student at the London School of Economics and looking at what is our port system doing? Why aren't we able? I mean, Jerry Belisle, years ago, he was a transportation governor, and there was a real understanding that we have people and we have products. Let's start making some of these products pay for what we need in terms of delivering the kind of transportation, widening the roads.
You mentioned the unification of Fort Monroe, and I wonder what's your position on that question. As you know, there's been discussion about the unification of that. So give us where you are.
I'm fully supportive of the unification. It's a national treasure. I sat in Paris at UNESCO looking at ways and having conversations with UN agencies about ways to make that a World Heritage Site. Because we have the opportunity, once again, in the second district, we have two of the only NASA facilities. We're the only congressional district in the United States that has two NASA facilities. We have the cradle of democracy in America. And so we need to start tying together our transportation needs with our tourism needs.
So you do support unification?
Yes, I do.
In Fort Monroe.
100%. Yes.
You know, one of the other questions that comes up has to do with the Affordable Care Act, sometimes known as Obamacare. There's been a great conversation about from folks who are saying, you know, it's got some problems, we need to fix it. And other folks saying, we got to repeal this thing and start over. Where are you on the ACA?
We need to expand Obamacare. But for me, the end game is a single payer system in which we're moving closer to a system in which there's a federal authority to pay for all expenses. I think once we trim down some of the concerns we have now with the cost of drugs, with the cost of the profit already in the system now in Obamacare. So, yeah, I'm for expanding Obamacare because we just can't stop. There's so many people who have not been included in Obamacare. But for me, I'm going to fight for a single payer system.
We're at 18 minutes past the hour talking with Sean Brown, who wants to be the second district congressperson. That second district, again, I want to make sure that we've got that right. It continues to be centered on Virginia Beach, but the territory there has been expanded to include Williamsburg, York County, part of James City County, some nearby communities, keeps those Virginia Eastern Shore communities as well. But those of you who live in Newport News who may have previously voted in the second, you want to check the State Board of Election website because you probably are voting in a different district. All you have to do is go to sbe.virginia.gov, plug in your address, and it'll tell you exactly where you vote. We really are encouraging people to do that ahead of time because it would be a terrible thing to show up on election day and you're in the wrong spot. There have been a lot of changes in these districts, and so we want to make sure that you are getting to the place that you need to go. Let's talk a moment about taxes. That's certainly taxes and the economy certainly been a key feature of so many campaigns. On the question of personal taxation, what changes would you press for in that arena in terms of who's getting taxed and what they're getting taxed?
Having been heavily involved in international trade for a number of years and understanding the corporate tax structure and the ability to go overseas and partner with companies and thus not have to pay corporate taxes in the United States because of various opportunities. So that for me would we will address that. We need to keep jobs in America. We need to keep money in America, and we need to be able to understand. Years ago in our own export company, our firm sat down with the Export-Import Bank and basically said every dollar that goes overseas, there should be an American job created. The second thing that I would take a look at is a tax on trade on Wall Street. There are a number of statistics where perhaps over $300 billion can be raised with just taxes on trades. These are, again, types of fees that will help to promote the economy, bring our jobs back home. And taking a look at the personal income tax structure, that's biting off a lot. And I really need to sit down with that, because once you address the corporate issues and you address some of the concerns that we have with the taxes on trade, then I would come back and take a look at the, I mean, there are a number of issues from fair tax to making sure the wealthy pay their fair share. So in general terms, that's where I stand. But I would like to be more specific once we understand where the corporate tax structure is and how we need to address that.
One of the aspects about working in Congress that was much lamented by Congressman Scott Ridgel, who currently holds the post, has to do with what he describes as a sort of a breakdown in civility between the parties. He really has talked a lot about that. I wonder, if you were to be elected heading into Washington, what sorts of what would you do to change that atmosphere?
I think the it's important to underscore the issue of respect for everyone. Whether I agree or disagree with you, it is all about respect. I'm even concerned that there are a number of people who tried to register to vote and they weren't able to, and now they've been kind of outside of the system. So again, that's an issue of respect. Whether they were supporting the Republican or Democratic nominee, it does not matter. Yes, I'm going to cross the aisle. I have found, even in my own race, a number of Republicans who have come to me, a number of a coalition that is an unusual coalition. So the sense that I have now is the same type of relationship that I see in Congress. You know, I've had an opportunity to go to schools around the world, and I've had an opportunity to go to many different countries around the world, and it just really does come down to respect.
You have said that you're supportive of paid maternity leave and legislation designed to level the income playing field.
Yes.
between men and women. How would you go about that?
That's a good question. The Ledbetter Act, all of those things that have been currently being promoted, I would be a staunch supporter of that. It is about equal pay for equal work. It is about understanding the corporate structure. And just as we will look at the $15 minimum wage, we're really going to have to look at, I hate to come off as somebody who's looking at policing these corporations in terms of the respect, because they're private entities, and having had a private business myself, but there has to be a level playing field where there's an understanding of the minimum and there and not so much incentives, but there's an understanding similar to the banking community, the Community Reinvestment Act. If you're not following the rules, and you know, there's some penalty there.
One of the subjects we discussed on yesterday's broadcast has to do with marijuana. There is great interest in this community and conversation.
Yes.
Around the continuum along legalization, decriminalization, and those sorts of associated issues. So I wonder where you are on the question of decriminalizing marijuana.
I support it.
That's easy. I thought you were going on with something else. So that brings us to this conversation about the justice system, because one of the things that's pointed out in that process is that a lot of folks in the prison system, the jail system now, are there because of marijuana-related offenses. I think you've also supported removing marijuana as a Schedule One drug. And that brings us to a conversation about the death penalty. And I wonder if you could give us a sense of where you are
I'm opposed.
And how about the Second Amendment and gun reform? This is something that people are also doing a lot of talking about.
I support people legally having a gun, but look, the Second Amendment, that was at a time that there was a need for a militia. Sensible gun reform. I'm not trying to take your gun legally away. Sensible gun reform. I don't necessarily think you need an assault rifle to go hunting. We do need extensive background checks. I mean, there are just some common sense things that I believe that we can do that won't hurt the average citizen that wants to have a gun legally.
25 minutes past the hour. Pam's on the line now from Yorktown. Hi, Pam. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question about Congress that has been mired down in idiocy for quite a while now. Nothing seems to get done, or very little seems to get done. What I'm curious about is, would you consider working to change the way bills are presented in Congress, that all bills be standalone bills with no add-ons, no tack-ons, so that we can take a perfectly good bill and not destroy it by putting on something that is abhorrent to at least half the constituency?
And so that we can pull out a little bit of that and put it in a campaign ad, right? Yeah,
well,
Pam, thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful question. Yes, I would.
Pam, I know that you and many voters are concerned about this issue because it does come back to us in a variety of other ways, and it becomes a sort of campaign fodder.
Yeah, it does. Attached to that is also a conversation about inside trading, the inside conversations that members of Congress have about what's going on, and that's part of the reason that these other things get tacked on. And so, I'm strongly supportive of very rigorous conflict of interest laws and requirements for members of Congress. So, yes, I would. I mean, I've been fortunate to be able to see a lot of the world, understand some of the concerns of the world. And so I'm going there to work. I'm not going there to try to figure out a way to make money or do some things. It's really about, I've been very touched by the citizens in the second district and all of us. I was surprised early on when many of the citizens, black as well as white, would come to me with tears in their eyes and say, "You are really running in the second district." So we're breaking barriers every day. There's been a tremendous amount of shock that a black woman has the courage to run in the second district. The pastors often tell me that. So I'm going to be proud to represent everyone.
Sean Brown, I always like to leave the last minute for the candidate to say anything you didn't get to say or anything you want to make sure that the voters know as they head to the polls.
It'll be my honor to represent you in Congress. I would appreciate your support, your vote. Come to our offices. My phone number is 757-380-0071. Please call me directly. We're running a grassroots campaign. And what that means is that I'm spending time talking to you. I'm not necessarily spending all the time that some might say that I need to raising money, because you can't do both. This is a district in which it takes me 3 hours to go from Eastern Shore to Williamsburg. And this is someone, for once this time around, for once and for all, needs to stop and say, we've got too many people hurting in the second district, and somebody needs to take time to listen to them so that we can fight.
Sean Brown, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Sean Brown's website is seanbrownforcongress.org. You should know that Sean is spelled, in this case, S-H-A-U-N. Her Twitter handle is @SeanBrownVA, @SeanBrownVA. We are going to take a quick break to check in with Pledge Central, but when we come back, we'll have our pre-recorded conversation with the Republican candidate, Scott Taylor. So that will be on right after a quick check-in with Pledge Central to see how things are going on this third weekday of our fall pledge drive. Stay with us. We're looking at the second congressional district. Again, that That's Virginia Beach, a little bit of Williamsburg, York County, part of James City County, nearby counties as well to James City, and Eastern Shore as well. SBE.virginia.gov, where you can plug in your address and see where you vote. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Sally McConnell from WHRV, and things are just going beautifully here in Pledge Central. I'm here with my buddy Jason. We've been here most of the morning. We have so many people to thank. We're almost halfway to our daily goal of $40,000. So thank you for everyone who has renewed or made a new pledge to WHRV. We know that every time you turn on the radio, you are supporting the stories that are thought-provoking and entertaining. I know that's what it means to me, and I know that's what it means to you, Jason.
It is. And you know, when you come here to WHRV, you hear Steve Inskeep, Kathy Lewis, Barbara Hamlee, Robert Siegel, Ari Shapiro, Kelly McEvers, and they bring you fascinating interviews, great perspectives, and places, and it's all in one place. That's the best part about it, is you can go one station, one channel, and you get all of this great content brought right to you.
And you know, that is so critical right now in this election year. You know what Kathy mentioned, after this break she's going back to hear from candidates from the second congressional district. Tonight is the third and final presidential debate. NPR will be streaming that live, and there'll also be a really interesting feature where there'll be live fact-checking of what the candidates say. You know, you just don't get that kind of news anywhere else.
No, you really don't. And that's something that you know that you can count on with WHRV. You know that you're going to get that thoughtful, balanced representation of what it is we're talking about. And that's why we want to know that we can count on you, the listeners. We want you to come and call right now. Become a member if you haven't done it yet. Become a sustaining member if you're down for it. That's very easy to do.
889-9476. It's so easy to be a sustainer. Here's someone who has sustained us for 20 years.
That's right, Kathy Lewis.
Kathy Lewis. And we are celebrating 20 years of Hearsay on the air. There'll be a big celebration around this anniversary tomorrow.
That's right.
But right now, here's a great opportunity.
If you want to call right now, and we want the listeners right here, Hearsay listeners, we want a couple of you right now. Maybe we can get five of you to call in right now and pledge support. And if you do $20 monthly sustainer level or a $240 gift right now, we're going to give you the Slanket.
The Slanket. And if you guys could see me now modeling the Slanket.
It's amazing. No one can do anything. She has the Slanket on right now. All eyes are on
Sally. I'm warm. I'm cozy. It's like a big blanket, but I have my arms through it. And the best part is it has the Hearsay logo
on
it. It's the commemorative gift, the thank you gift at the $20 a month level, $240 a year, to say thank you, Kathy Lewis, for bringing us 20 years of Hearsay.
That's right. Thoughtful, provoking interviews with local politicians that we need. We need these great interviews, because, I mean, who's going to take the time? Not many people take the time to do the research. And right here, you can listen to it and get right out of their mouths.
Just as you have been saying and we've been saying all morning, thank you for support. Support what you love. It's so easy. 889-9476, or go online, any device, whrv.org. Support Kathy's 20th anniversary. Support Hearsay.
Support what you love.
Support what you love. Support all the program. We feel the love. We thank you for your support.
Keep
it coming.
That's right. Keep it coming. We're really close. Our goal today is $40,000. We are almost halfway there. It would be cool if we could get there in the next 3 minutes.
It would be cool if we could get there in the next 3 minutes, but we hope we'll at least have five new sustaining members by the time that Hearsay concludes today.
That's right. So take the time, if you're listening to this right now in your car, or if you've always thought to yourself, gosh, you know, maybe I should just go ahead and contribute. Maybe I should be a member of this radio station, as I did. I've said before, I used to listen and I still listen, but I wasn't a member. I didn't feel that sense of ownership. But now that I'm a sustaining member, it's true. I really do feel a sense of ownership to the station.
Yeah, I mean, I work here, so obviously I do too. But, you know, I think what is public radio all about? It's really for those independent thinkers. Discerning listeners. Mm-hmm. So continue, as thoughtful listeners in Eastern Virginia, inform listeners to support WHRV, 889-9476.
WHRV. WHRV.org.
WHRV.org. Thanks, Jason. It's been a great time
you, Sally.
Being with you this morning.
Thank you. Me too. I've had a great time.
Yeah, and thank you again to everyone for your support in this segment.
It's a pleasure to have Scott Taylor in the conversation today. He would very much like to be the congressional representative from the 2nd Congressional District of Virginia. And of course, that is a very, very important district here in the Hampton Roads region. Scott Taylor is a former Navy SEAL, re-enlisted after 9/11, injured on the job on a combat mission, came back to the United States, became an entrepreneur, a real estate broker, and also works with Fortune 500 companies around the issues of security and asset protection. And we're glad to have you with us today, Scott Taylor. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Kathy. It's great to be with you and your audience, as always.
We should note that this is not your first run at public office. You are currently serving in the House of Delegates in the Commonwealth of Virginia, representing the 85th, which is sort of that Kempsville town center area of Virginia Beach.
I am humbled to serve the fighting 85th. In Virginia Beach, and it's been a great time.
And so I wonder if you could give us a sense of your background, your legislative experience, and how you think that prepares you for federal office.
Sure. Well, I grew up, was raised by a single mother on the Eastern Shore, right over the Maryland line, started working on a farm by age 11, paying taxes, by the way, at that age. And I was also mentored by a big brother, big brothers and big sisters. I'm a little brother who's really more like a father to me. Left that small town with the self-confidence that he instilled in me, quite frankly, and to become a Navy SEAL at the age of 19. Spent a couple years in South and Central America. I'm fluent in Spanish, and then I, of course, went over to Iraq, taught marksmanship and reconnaissance to other SEALs as well for a couple years. And then when I got out of the military, I was in real estate, and I was also went back and forth for just about 4 years or so to Yemen, doing security consulting, as you said, and negotiating with armed tribesmen in the middle of the Arabian Desert, which is why it's easy to negotiate in Richmond and Washington, potentially, because there's no AK-47s and Arabic being thrown around everywhere. And then, of course, I got elected in 2013 to the Virginia House of Delegates, where I focused on legislation that dealt with military and veterans, with education, and with the economy and jobs. So let me touch a little bit about my background and why that helps, and then I'll touch the legislation and the experience in the General Assembly, why that translates. So my background, of course, is very diverse. I've been in, 40-some countries or something like that. So from an international level, I understand foreign policy, international relations. I didn't say, but I also used the GI Bill to get an undergrad from Harvard University in international relations. And I'm just about finished my master's degree in the same program. So I understand the theoretical as well as the practical when it comes to foreign policy and international relations, which, of course, is very important for our area, because if there's anything happening in the world, we will be there for sure. Our sons and daughters will be, or we will be. So, what I would say is, I understand business. I understand what it means to fail and succeed in business as well, too. We had my generation, quite frankly, has known two big things, war and recession, throughout our adult lives, and I've definitely felt both. So that lends itself to understand that. As I said, I'm from the Eastern Shore. The Eastern Shore of Virginia, of course, is in the 2nd District, so I understand the concerns there. And the folks that are, whether it's in the poultry industry or the watermen that are there or the farmers or the businessmen there, I understand them. Now, in the General Assembly, I worked on legislation that tried to get coding into elementary schools and then also used as a foreign language, which I believe is quite frankly, the future and part of something that we need to be teaching every single kid. They need to understand or have at least be exposed to coding, much like we expose people to the arts and to music, not because they're going to be artists or musicians when they grow up, but they may take off with coding as well, too. And quite frankly, It doesn't matter your socioeconomic background. If you can code and do well with that, you could literally change the world. So I worked on that. Also worked on passing legislation that created efficiencies for overseas voters, military and folks that are serving overseas, obviously very applicable to our area, as well as passed legislation that now in the 7 largest community colleges with the most veteran populations, there is a full-time veterans advisor who helps them navigate through state and federal resources. And I got a budget amendment passed to be able to fund that as well. On the economy and jobs, I've passed legislation, that groundbreaking legislation in Virginia that allows for everyone, and they don't have to be accredited, but they can crowdfund into equity. And what that means is, Kathy, you make the best coffee in Norfolk, and you don't have the money to open up a brick-and-mortar shop, and you could go to the internet and crowdfund and basically get access to capital. 1,000 of your biggest coffee consumers give you $50, so now you have your $50,000, and you have 1,000 brand ambassadors, right? So before my legislation, that was illegal for anybody to give you money into equity unless they were accredited, mm-hmm. which means they have $1 million in the bank and make a bunch of money. I also passed a series of legislation to incentivize the conversion of diesel 18-wheelers to natural gas, because the biggest user of foreign oil are actually 18-wheelers. We don't realize how many of them. There's many of them. Of course, they move all the goods across the country. Natural gas is a domestic market. It's a cleaner fuel than diesel, so better for the environment. And based on that legislation, UPS actually converted their whole Virginia fleet this year to natural gas based on that infrastructure legislation, that incentivizing legislation. So I know that was rambly, but it tells you a little bit of how my background and as well as my legislative background translates into Washington. And just before I hand it back over to you for the next question, I will also tell you that my experience in Richmond has definitely taught me a couple things. One, relationships matter in a legislative body on both sides of the aisle. Relationships matter. And that's something that I've done all my life, that I've done in the deserts of Yemen, I've done in the General Assembly, and I'll do in Washington. And the second thing is sometimes transformative legislation, or really big, bulky, comprehensive is the word you always hear, it's very difficult to get passed because there's so many different varying interests, right? Sometimes you have to do things in a transactional manner as opposed to transformative. So just like my legislation in natural gas, it basically tweaked existing law and was transactional, and it added up to transformative. So I've learned those two things, and I forgot to say that I'm also fluent in Spanish, which helps me in the Latino community as well.
Yeah, you did say that. Scott Taylor, our guest today, he'd like to represent those of you who live in the 2nd Congressional District. And by the way, if you're driving around and you're thinking, I don't know what congressional district I live in, no worries. You can log on to the State Board of Elections website, input your address, and it will feed back to you the congressional district you live in, as well as the state representatives who represent you in the House of Delegates and the Senate in the General Assembly. We're talking about Scott Taylor's efforts to be the 2nd district congressman. And, one of the things I wonder about, you mentioned about this business of transactional and transformative legislation. And you said that in some cases you had to be transactional. I know that you are opposed to Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. You think it needs to be repealed and replaced. So putting that overlay of transactional, transformative over that, I wonder why you have that stance instead of the stance that some people have, that is, basically we got it done. And given the political realities, that was tough. So, yes, it absolutely needs to be tweaked. Why do you think it has to be repealed and replaced?
Well, let me I've been very clear and on the record talking about this as well, too. Let me preface it by saying that I believe that the direction of healthcare in regards to Obamacare will be dictated by who the next president is. So if it's Donald Trump's the next president, then there's probably a likely move for a repeal and replace. If Hillary Clinton is the next president, you won't have that, but I think you will have it tweaked, because there's no question about it that it needs to be completely tweaked, because there's huge fundamental problems with Obamacare. So, and I actually got attacked in my primary for talking about this with the pilot, and what I said was this: – if there is a Hillary Clinton presidency and there's not a repeal and replace of Obamacare, then I think that both parties should come together in a transactional way to make sure that we are reducing the cost of health care for people and getting more people access to it. So I have no problem with doing it in a transactional manner if there's a Hillary Clinton presidency. And quite frankly, if there's a Donald Trump presidency and it's not repealed, then we should be doing the same thing, because what my goal would be in working on healthcare is to actually reduce the cost of healthcare for people that are out there in the second district and beyond.
We're talking with Scott Taylor today about his efforts to be the second district congressman. You know, some of the other issues I think that are really important for folks in the second, one of the issues is actually a citywide issue. And since you represent Town Center and Kempsville, I want to ask you about light rail, because a lot of people are talking about that in this election season. There's a non-binding referendum on the ballot, as you know, and there are federal funds that will be expended in all kinds of transportation initiatives. So I wonder where you are on the question of light rail.
Well, it's not a simple yes or no. I've been very clear and on the record talking about light rail as well, too, that I wouldn't support additional state funds for light rail. We were waiting, of course, for the city to come forward with a package of what it is they wanted to do as a delegate, but I wouldn't support additional funding. I love the concept of multimodal transportation, and quite frankly, I think that when a city is growing, you look at strategic growth areas, and when you're able to have areas of more density, like along a light rail or mass transit, it actually reduces costs, because sprawl development is actually more expensive on city services than having a little bit more density, which of course increases taxes if you don't have that. So, however, that being said, it is extremely expensive, and I think that we do need to look at where we're going in transportation and what is the next thing. Light rail, as you very well know, it's not new technology, and I believe you could pave that whole way there and use driverless car buses, which are basically in Europe in use right now, for the fraction of the cost of light rail. So
you're talking about taking existing roadway and converting it, not expanding that roadway.
I'm talking about taking that light rail line. So there are buses that are being used right now.
I see.
They look like they're driverless, basically, and it's along a line like that that's not in traffic, if you will. They're already being used. You can call them on your iPhone to a stop, or they can be set at a certain schedule. So my point is, I would like to see us look towards the future and look towards technologies that are going to be coming available. And I think that I have apprehensions about light rail being an old technology. That being said, I like having multimodal transportation, and I like the ability for cities to have strategic growth areas along them, because I think it makes sense for a growing city.
We're talking with Scott Taylor today, I wonder, as you think about this issue of the particular points that are important to people in the second district, one of the aspects of the primary campaign in which you won the right to represent your party had to do with seniority in the House of Representatives.
It
should you be elected, the person you will be replacing had been there for a number of terms. The person who ran against you for this opportunity ran on the notion that he had been critical in Congress in terms of committee assignments that are important to the region. So I wonder how you plan to, should you be elected, how do you plan to position yourself in terms of committee representation on those committees that are important to the folks in the second?
Sure. So that's a sort of a two-part question, I think. So number one, obviously my primary opponent was running in a place that he didn't live, and that his argument for being critical to his district and then the state in Congress would have probably served him better in the 4th district, not in the 2nd district. That being said, just as when I went into Richmond as a new delegate, if you will, there are challenges, right? So there are people that maybe have seniority in your way. And I believe, let me say this first, that leadership is not positional. anybody can be a leader in any position. It's just, it's basically leadership at its rawest form is influence. And how do you influence things in the dialogue and the people up there as a new guy, right? First, you have to build relationships. You have to build trust amongst those folks. And I've actually already started doing that in Richmond already, but I did the same thing in Washington, but I had already done it in Richmond as well. And what you do is you find the people who are in the positions of leadership, and you persuade them. We're in the persuasion business, politics, that's what it is. You persuade them, you give them credit, you make the idea theirs. Those are the types of things that you do, but you certainly, first and foremost, build relationships and trust. And it's something that I've done in the Amazon and the deserts and the mountains and Richmond, and I'll do the same thing in Washington.
Well, let's talk for a moment.
Committees. Did you want me to go on to committee?
Yes.
So logically, of course, for this district, House Armed Services, because of the district, because of my background, makes sense. And then Foreign Affairs probably would as well because of my personal background. That being said, this year, Virginia will be without an appropriator for the first time in 102 years. It was actually a banker from Suffolk in the 2nd District 102 years ago who started that. And, of course, as we both know, and we all know, that Virginia is there's a lot of government spending in Virginia with a military basis. This congressional district has 8 major military installations, the most military active duty and veterans of any congressional district in the nation. That being said, we're shooting for appropriations. That's a high hurdle for a freshman to get, but we're meeting with folks on the steering committee. I think that we have a good argument to do it. We've had great meetings already in Washington. So the number one thing I'm shooting for is appropriations, and if you're able to get on defense appropriations subcommittee, there's nothing better for this district than that. And if we can't hit that hurdle first and foremost, then we'll be on House Armed Services and hopefully Foreign Affairs.
Talking with Scott Taylor, who wants to represent those of you who live in the 2nd Congressional District. Let's talk for a moment about taxes, if we may. That's certainly an issue that's featured prominently in this campaign. I know from sitting behind this microphone there, people are very frustrated with the complexity of taxes. And I wonder if you could give us a sense of where you are on that. I know you think it needs to be simplified, but in what ways do you think it should be simplified?
Well, there's a couple things on taxes. Number one, as I told you, I was raised by a single mother, 4 kids in the house. You know, every bit of dollars that go out there that you don't have really definitely affected my family and certainly affects a lot of folks and families around the 2nd District. So when you hear taxes, I think they should be simplified, flatter. You know, the tax code, I just actually signed my taxes yesterday, and it's just amazing how complex they are when they shouldn't be that complex. So in general, I think a simplifying of the tax code, a flatter one, makes more sense. Now, specifically, when you look at the corporate tax code, when you look at 35% corporate tax rate, which is the most in the world, right, quite frankly, and I believe that's anti-American. We have $2.1 trillion that we know of overseas. We should cut a deal. We should get that money back in this economy so it's going through that money market multiplier and helping our economy. I think that we have to do that. Now, when you look at – when I just talked about, you know, my family growing up and then the families of the 2nd District, they just came out that the tax revenues the government has right now are the most in the nation's history. So we don't need more taxes, for sure. We need to look at other things like cutting government spending, in my opinion.
You know, that's an interesting point because a lot of people have looked at that and said, you know, in fact, the gentleman who represented your district up until December said he felt like there needed to be sort of a formula around revenue and taxes. And it was his belief that you did need more revenue and perhaps some more taxes, depending on what that scenario is. So you're saying you really believe
that
this could be done with...
I respectfully disagree with Scott, who I completely respect, and he's been wonderful to me, and I think he did a good job. I respectfully disagree because, as I said before, the government has taken in record number of taxes from American citizens. I believe, and I've worked in government, I think there's fat in budgets. I think that we could look across the board. You look at Canada in the 1990s, they were able to cut 20% of their government over 5 years and really get their budget in line. One of the big things that's not talked about that I want to talk about is entitlement reform and talking about raising the age of Social Security and Medicare. And one of the things that politicians, of course, have been scared to do is talk about that because then they get attacked, granny's going off to the cliff and all that crap. In my opinion, it is my generation the 40 and below generations that will have to sacrifice. First of all, we've sacrificed more than any generation since the Great Generation of World War II in these wars over the last 15 years, but we're not done yet. I believe we have to step up and show leadership and really reform these entitlements and push that age up, because we're simply living longer, and it's going to have to be my generation that shows leadership in changing that, and that's one of the things that we have to do.
One of the questions we get asked, and we should note that we are recording this interview. In all of these interviews, we've tried very hard to accommodate the candidate's schedule, so we're recording this one. But one of the questions that consistently comes in when we do these interviews live, particularly for Republican candidates, has to do with your stance on the statements of the Republican presidential nominee, particularly with regard to the controversial comments and statements about a number of groups, but most recently about women. And so I want to ask you where you are on that question. That seems to be, I don't want to say a litmus test, but certainly is an indicator for many people who are watching this.
Well, I think, look, I've been very public, and I've been in print with the Pilot refuting my nominee's statements. For example, with the Khan family, you know, the Gold Star family. I know a lot of Gold Star families. Unfortunately, I was very critical of him. I thought anybody should basically be quiet, apologize, and move forward. And I've said the same thing about the complete Muslim ban. I think that his comments on women that were on the tape from 11 years ago are absolutely out of line, and they're inexcusable. So that's my position on it. And I've been very public about it.
And but you're still supporting the nominee.
I'm supporting the nominee because it's not just those comments that go into this election. To me, from my opinion, the Supreme Court is a huge thing. In my opinion, I want someone on the court who is going to interpret the Constitution and be more like a Scalia, if you will, intellectually. I want to make sure that the whole apparatus that is governing us, unelected, unaccountable regulatory bodies, all those folks are more like me than Hillary Clinton. We could go all day long and talk about why I don't support Hillary and specific policies and all that stuff. But yes, I want a Republican president.
We can't go all day long. Because you have to go, and we have about a minute or so left. I always like to save that last minute, though, for the candidate to say anything that you feel like you didn't get to say in this conversation, or anything that you particularly want the people of the 2nd District to know.
Sure. Well, listen, when I believe that representation, you represent everyone, right? Black, white, brown, gay, straight, civilian, soldier, it really doesn't matter. And I've done that as a delegate. We've been very responsive to our folks. I think that, you know, if we have the privilege of being elected, the same will be true for our congressional office. We'll be open to everyone. We'll fight for everyone. Sure, we'll disagree, but I don't think there's anyone out there who has somebody that they don't disagree with sometimes, of course. But I think that we've shown that in our campaign, that we're responsive to everyone, and we'll continue to be so. And I'm asking for your vote on November 8th.
Scott Taylor, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Kathy.
You're welcome. I appreciate you. Scott Taylor is the Republican candidate who wants to represent the 2nd Congressional District. And if you're interested in learning more about Scott Taylor, it's scotttaylor.us. Twitter handle is @ScottTaylorVA. If you're interested in learning more about Sean Brown, the website is seanbrownforcongress.org, and Sean is spelled S-H-A-U-N. Twitter handle is @SeanBrownVA. Coming up tomorrow, we'll celebrate our 20th anniversary. I cannot believe it's been that long, but indeed it has been, so we'll do that tomorrow. And up next here on 89.5, it's Radiolab. And then coming up tonight on WHRO TV 15 at 8 o'clock, it's Nature, all about the Congo, about the beauty and the majesty thereof. And then at 9 o'clock, probably not much beauty and majesty. It's the PBS NewsHour Debates, a special report. This is live coverage of the 3rd and final presidential debate coming up at 9 tonight on WHRO TV 15, as well as being simulcast here on 89.5 WHRV. Thanks so much for listening today. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.